To be honest, just from the experience I have, the experience that we got coming back, I'll say so. I feel like it's even more excitement, you know, knowing what type of team we have coming back, knowing, you know, we got a chip on our shoulder. I'm just ready to get after it, man. And each and every day I've been hyped. Like, I've been too excited. I've been hyped more than the kids, seeing us, to be honest.
So that's Lamar Jackson speaking to NFL Network earlier this week as they were out of training camp. Ravens just finished up their third day of padded practice, which is the max for padded practice days during training camp. We'll talk to Cordell Woodland about that coming up at 5:30.
So if they do it again tomorrow, heads are going to roll.
Yes. If anybody's paying attention, it's
the PA. There'll be a mutiny in the locker room.
There
so
will.
I'm not putting those pads on.
Yeah, no. They will refuse. I'm sure the guys that are part of the PA will absolutely refuse. But alas, Lamar thinks it's the best team that he's been on with the Ravens. Jason, are you agreeing with Lamar Jackson?
Yeah. I am. It's an offense that might not have an equal in the game. And like, I was thinking about this the other night too. It's been a given for, at least to me, and I think to a lot of people over the last 3 to 4 years, that there was Patrick Mahomes and there was everybody else. And like, people had their moments. Joe Burrow had a moment, but like, Joe Burrow's missed a lot of playoff time. And I mean, missed a lot of playing time. Joe Burrow's team has missed the playoffs a couple times recently. Like, is it all on him? Of course not. But like, you know, we've seen that team in KC recalibrate and it's not all on Mahomes' shoulders anymore. And like, Mahomes in the playoffs still has a record unlike anything else, even Tom Brady. But I don't know that I would take Patrick Mahomes over Lamar Jackson right now. Like, if I had to play a game tomorrow, I don't know. And it's schoolyard, and you know what I mean? And you're a team captain, and you're picking teams, and all the NFL quarterbacks are standing in front of you.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm picking Mahomes before Lamar.
Well, if I'm going back to last year, Lamar Jackson was the best player in football, and I don't think it was particularly close. And you can say Patrick Mahomes, you can say Josh Allen, who won MVP, air quotes. But Lamar Jackson was the best player in the NFL last year, and it wasn't even close. And the numbers illustrate that. Offensively, you look at the offense as a collective under Lamar Jackson, it illustrates that. Derrick Henry having one of the best seasons of his career at age 30 illustrates that.
Well, Derrick Henry career year, Zay Flowers career year,
Bateman.
Rashad Bateman career year.
Yeah.
Andrews led the tight ends and touchdowns.
Andrews, when he got healthy second half of the year, was
Ronnie
a touchdown
Stanley
machine.
Rebirth.
And Justice Hill career year.
Yeah, Justice, yeah.
Yeah, like,
it's not all coincidence.
And we didn't think it was a dominant offensive line. We thought it could be a good one. It could be a cohesive one. But like,
and that offensive line was a massive question mark heading into the year, replacing three starters from the year prior.
Yeah, thought it could be solid. Didn't think it would be the cat's meow. So, yeah, I and this isn't to
hip
like
reference.
Look, Mahomes has had a better career than Lamar.
Absolutely. Sure.
But I mean, Mahomes had his that was Mahomes' worst regular season last year, and it wasn't even close. Like, and the year before that, things started to get a little janky. The red zone right play started to slip. Like, McKinnon got hurt. They couldn't replace him. The run game was sort of in fits and starts. Whereas Lamar's done nothing but ascend the last couple of years.
Yeah. And even the one bugaboo, the playoffs, he looked good in the postseason this past year. He killed the Steelers. And the second half of that Bills game, he's going up and down the field.
Yeah. Now, again, look, what Mahomes has done in the playoffs is special and different. And I'm not saying I'm taking Lamar over Mahomes in the AFC Championship. But if week one was tomorrow, and we're starting a season tomorrow, and I want to win the first game, and I get the pick of any quarterback in the league, I think I'm taking Lamar Jackson.
You want to hear more from Lamar Jackson?
Sure.
I do.
Thanks, Bone. Lamar talks about his team-first mentality on the field.
I'm just trying to win the game at the end of the day and trying to put my team in a great situation. Mm-hmm. And each and every time I'm on the field, I'm trying to score. So if we don't score, I'm pretty much ticked off. I don't care what I done did, you know, in that drive before. If we didn't score, it really don't matter.
It is interesting to watch him sometimes. It's almost like he gets too worked up when there's not success. Like it's almost like he needs to calm down a little bit, because the reality is you're not going to score every time you have the football.
And I think there's been growth with that. But I do think that frustration, look, there's a marathon and there's a sprint. Again, we're going back to regular season playoffs, but I think he has come leaps and bounds with that in the regular season. In the playoffs, I think because of some of those early failures and things that are still in the back of his mind, even though he's a better player now, and even though they've exercised some of those demons, I do think there's the propensity to get sped up or off kilter or start to get in their own head. Or, you know what I mean? If the first two drives don't go so well, are you seeing sideline shots and the body language looks a little different than it would have in December or November? I think that's probably still fair to say. I think that's still fair to sort of critique.
Yeah, I think one game in particular that stands out to me where it looked like playoff Lamar, if you will, was that first Steelers
Pittsburgh
game. Where I'm sure, okay, he hears all the noise. The Steelers have owned the Ravens this decade. Lamar has never done well against them. And that was really Lamar's only poor game of the entire season, postseason included. But then you fast forward to that playoff game against Pittsburgh, wild card weekend. They went 90-plus yards on the first drive, and then it was just an exhale from there.
Well, he went right down the field on the first drive against Buffalo. And I know he had the turnovers early, and Buffalo didn't score off the pick, but the fumble led to points. But in the second half of that game—
But, even the way he reacted to the fumble and the bad snap, you know what I mean? And, instead of just falling on the ball, you know what I mean? And being relaxed, there still is a little bit of that, that hyper, that it's just, right? I don't, and then even watching some of the shots after that on the sidelines from that, it's a little hard for them to exhale and get over it. Or in the moment, slow down, breathe, and just do the keep it simple, stupid thing to live to fight another day. They feel like they got to be a little extra.
Yeah. I feel, and to your point, I think maturity is key with Lamar Jackson. Like this, you can see him, he's far more centered than he was, say, when he first started in this league.
I will say this, though, about that Buffalo play, and should he have absolutely just eat it? Yes, but isn't part of that the Lamar Jackson experience? Because you can think of that first Cincinnati game where he made that throw to Likely.
When he fumbled the ball and picked it up.
It was kind of a similar where you get those type of moments. But those.
Time and place, though.
For sure.
I mean,
for sure.
That weather,
for
sure. That for field, sure. On the road.
Do or die.
Do or die. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
It's a key play. Old ass Von Miller.
I mean, look, they looked like they were going to take it to Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that happened and
completely changed.
Yeah. Then next thing you know, they're chasing the game.
Yeah. And even with all that, second half, Mark Andrews has that fumble in Bill's territory. They're probably going down to score and he drops the 2-point game. Like, if they don't turn the ball over in the second half, they probably win that football game, even with what happened in the first half.
Pretty good chance.
Ravens done practice today at One Winning Drive. Cordell Woodland's going to join us at 5:30. We'll get his thoughts on how practice went and who's up, who's down as far as training camp at One Winning Drive for the Ravens. It's their third day in a row of padded practice, so they can't be in pads. Excuse me, tomorrow. Coming up next, though, we want to hear from the people. 410-583-1057. Ryan Ripken's going to join us at 4:30, but the trade deadline is now 26 hours away. What are you looking to see from the Orioles? What are you hoping to see from the Orioles? How many guys will be traded off of this roster? Will they make a buy kind of move? Will they trade for a controllable pitcher? 410-583-1057. We hear from the people next. The trade deadline is less than 26 hours away. What would you like to see the Orioles do? What do you think the Orioles are going to do? Do you think they'll make a buy kind of trade to go get a controllable pitcher? Also, Ravens training camp is going on, so you can call about the Ravens as well. 410-583-1057. Let's get things started with Joe in Ellicott City. Joe, you're on the Fan.
What's up, guys?
Hey there.
Not much, man. I mean, there's two separate questions. What do I want them to do and think they're going to do? I think I'd love them to, you know, not be afraid to go after a controlled pitcher, like a guy for like Sandy Contreras from the Marlins, somebody like along those lines. I know he's having a down year, but
it's been great his last couple starts. Yeah,
yeah, but it wouldn't be like I don't think there should be guys, not even just prospects, but like there's certain guys like that have upside that I'm not a big believer in. I hate to say like Colton Cowser. I'm not a bigger believer in like, you know, Kobe Mayo. I just think there's guys like that that you shouldn't be afraid to trade. I think they will never trade those guys because they just stick to their guns. So I think they're probably going to trade the more expendable players. And at the least, I think if they do that, they need to have some sort of top-line talent that they can develop in the farm system because they just don't have that. And they didn't have it coming into this year. So they need to get some sort of farm system back where they have – top line pitching. I don't know if that's possible with the guys that they want to trade, but that's what I think they're probably going to end up doing.
Appreciate the call. By the way, he brings up a name. Like, if they traded Colton Cowser to get a in a buy kind of move for pitching, I'm not saying he's getting it done by himself, but I know where Jason is on this, but I'm not opposed to trading Colton Cowser if you're going to get a controllable pitcher.
I would be shopping Colton Cowser. I mean, I would have been, I'd be marketing Colton Cowser.
Well, show video of that throw today.
And it was an awesome throw. Yeah. Well, it goes back to the point, like, you should be listening to pretty much everybody on this roster. Like, there aren't many untouchables on this roster.
Let me ask you guys a question. Are they closer to being the Tampa Bay Rays or the New York Yankees?
The Rays.
And the Rays are a draft developed player development team.
Yes. And they also weren't afraid to trade guys.
Let me keep going. They're talking about trading Josh Lowe because they believe they can actually continue to develop players and good value for Josh Lowe. But here we're being sold an alleged core of untouchables. How can that be? Those guys have done more than these guys.
Yep. But I also hate the and John would always bring up the Rays and the like. No, you're a bigger market than the Rays. Your salary that you're able to dole out should be a heck of a lot more than the Rays.
But his like, point is
no,
that,
in
like,
in terms of the draft development, I know, and I'm just
if you're good at what you do, you wouldn't be like, oh, this guy's untouchable, that guy's untouchable, that like Heston Kerstad was untouchable forever, and Mayo was untouchable forever. What is that crap? If you're good at your job, you're trying to do as much as possible. You're not limiting the scope of what you're willing to listen to. Because all your prospects are going to hit? No. Stop. That's Little League stuff.
410-583-1057. Pete is in Timonium. Pete, you're on the fan.
Yeah, you already took my thunder on Cowser. I can't even. It's just unbelievable that he's still heralded the way he is.
Yeah.
But he's got his own section, Pete.
Boy, oh boy. He's a cult hero.
The other question I had for today was, I assume Laureano's not injured, right?
No, he pinch hit in the game today, and he should have drawn a walk to tie the game.
I know he pinch hit. How did he not start?
Manzolino said they were giving him a day off.
Start Laureano every day.
Well, I mean, it may be a moot point here. In 26 hours.
They said they were giving him an off day.
Yeah, I mean,
guys get off days.
I just had a doubleheader yesterday.
Yeah.
Eugenio Suarez got hit by a pitch the other day, right?
Yeah. He doubled today.
I know. No, he came back. But, like, look, the season's over. And he's not a developmental guy long term, I don't think.
No, he's what? I would love for everybody to play every game, but that's not the way baseball works. And like very rarely do guys play. Like the days of Cal Ripken, and he was an anomaly because he did it every year.
Yeah.
But you would have guys that played 160 games. That doesn't exist anymore.
Pretty rare. Some people are still doing it, but not many.
Let's go back out to the phone lines, 410-583-1057. Reggie's in Tacoma Park. He wants to talk some Ravens. Reggie, you're on the fan.
Hey, guys. I'm actually a recent big Orioles fan, and it's been a roller coaster emotionally, as you know. But I don't know enough about baseball to talk about it, but go O's. I haven't heard too much talk about Keaton Mitchell, guys. Can you give me some insight? And I'll take the... anything you want to say off the air.
Yeah, Reggie, I'll tell you, he looks like he's got his burst back. But as Todd Monken pointed out the other day, You've got Derrick Henry here now, who was not here 2 years ago when Keaton Mitchell burst on the scene. And Justice Hill's a very valuable player for them. So he's sort of got to get in where he fits in because he's the third running back.
And also, remember, even during 2023, this guy was never getting double-digit carries.
We were putting in every six-pack.
Yeah, we were saying that, okay, he's going to be more of a...
catch a few more screen passes, whatever.
Even if he gets... gosh, a handful of touches a game. And that could be catches as well, because I'm with you, Cam. Monday being out there, the explosiveness is back. The agility for Keaton Mitchell is back.
It's not even about Derrick Henry. It's about he has the skill set of a third down back. They don't trust him in pass protection. Yes. And guess what? The guy who's in front of him is the third down back. He's not only is a demon in pass protection, but once Monk got here and they actually embraced the screen game and horizontal passes, he's really good on third down too. So that's the deal. Now, can he get more stuck in? What does that look like in the preseason? He's not going to get, much bigger. But I think the other side of the coin, where they need to tap into more in the interim, between maybe he becomes a third down back because he does get better in pass pro, is special teams. In the interim,
he's probably going to be their kickoff returner.
I hope so.
He was last year when he wasn't even right for a lot of the season. By the way, Justice Hill's not only really good at pass, he's their best pass protection guy.
He's a demon.
Remember Kansas City where he was on like left tackle. It was like he held his own. Yeah. Let's go to Jay in Baltimore. Jay, you're on the Fan.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
Hey there.
I think for the Orioles, just trade everybody. Trade them all. You already got to get a new manager. You might as well. You're already getting a new manager. So he's got to have his own little tweets and his quirks and the type of player he likes. So why not go ahead and get as much draft picks as you can and players just see what
You can't trade for draft picks, Jay, except for the comp ones.
Can't do that now.
Yeah. Appreciate the call. Yeah. Like Buzz Williams when Willard left. Everybody left. You started over. What's the Orioles NIL situation?
Well, it would have been interesting, again, if he blew out the front office when he blew out the skipper and you brought somebody else in. I think, again, you wouldn't be hearing talk about the untouchables and how great our core is and all this mumbo jumbo. No, you would have been scouring the market to find out what every other organization felt about your players. And then you'd be taking that back to ownership and saying, I think this one we got to act on, boss. I think it'd be a bad time to sell this guy, but I think we got to sell that guy. They did none of that. By their own admission, they did none of that. They abstained from the whole process that should have been going on. And if you don't believe us, you can go back into the Odyssey app or Spotify or whatever and find our interviews with Jim Bowden, find our interviews with Duquette, find our interviews with O'Dowd. And instead, they're both siding it until the very end. Oh, I don't know if we need to sell. Okay.
Trade deadline is tomorrow at 6 p.m. You'll want to tune into Inside Access tomorrow because when things happen, we will be on top of it. But coming up next, part of our BBT crew, Ryan Ripken. What's he think about what the Orioles are going to do in the next 24-plus hours? Ryan joins us next here on The Fan. Orioles lose a rough one today, 9-8. They took 3 of 4 from the Blue Jays, though. Trade deadline is tomorrow at 6 p.m. It's a perfect time to go out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline where we talk to our guy, Ryan Ripken, part of our Baltimore Baseball Tonight coverage. And, Ryan, thank you, as always, for your time. We appreciate it. So, if this was it for Ryan O'Hearn and Cedric Mullins, it was quite a finale.
It certainly was. Could not have left an impact anymore. I mean, Cedric Mullins, man, you understand why teams would have a value for a guy that can go up and steal a home run away. It seems like every other night at the moment. And with those two guys, the one point that I understand, and I joked around tweeting out that instead of, the O in Ryan O'Hearn stands for extend him. The O is just silent there, right? I'd love to see those guys stay, but we know the reality of the business. And if you get value and you have things that can help your team moving forward, then you're going to have to make a deal. But what makes it hard, personally, is knowing that they're great guys. But secondly, how much they love being a Baltimore Oriole and how much not only have they embraced the city of Baltimore, but I feel like the fan base has really embraced them too.
Ryan, going to the starting rotation, how many of Charlie Morton, Zach Eflin, and Tomoyuki Sugano do you expect to be dealt by tomorrow?
I think at least one. I wouldn't be surprised with multiple. I don't think that all of them get moved, but maybe I'd be, that'd surprise me. I lied. Nothing surprises me anymore with it. But I do think that at least one. Teams are probably looking at what the price tags are. What's the value of going to get a guy? And you know, Charlie Morton, for instance, a guy, you know, that's, you know, he's up there in age. This could be the last hurrah if he wants it to be. You know, a team has to feel very confident with a guy like him or a guy like Zach Eflin. Are you fully healthy? Are we going to get the better version of Zach Eflin that we saw at the beginning of the season before you went down with your first injury? And are teams going to be willing to gamble on Tomoyuki Sugano, who I think overall, by the way, has had a really solid first season? You know, I did a stat on Baltimore Baseball Tonight the other night. There were only 39 pitchers at the time that this was done on Monday, where there was 39 pitchers with an ERA below 4, right? And then the 43rd best ERA as far as for qualified pitchers was Tomoyuki Sugano. So he's done well, but our team is going to be worried about him facing the top teams as you move towards October. That's something I don't know, and I think that's still a question mark that Sugano holds more so than what Charlie Morton and Zach Eflin have done on their careers.
Have you sort of pondered at all what this outfield composition might look like? You know, assuming, like, let's say Cedric is gone, and let's say they trade Laureano as well. Do you think we would get Kowser in center field most of the time? Do you think if Carlson was still here, that he would get a bit of a run there? Do you think Dylan Beavers is on the first thing smoking up from Norfolk if that happens?
It feels like to me it'd be Kowser, you know, out in center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they rotate someone else in there depending on kind of the construction of the roster there. But it does feel like if you make that move, Colton Kowser is going to be the guy that you put out there in center field on a every day or I would like to see Colton Kowser mm-hmm. out there on an every day if you make the move. You know, I just released a clip earlier today on social media when I talked with Buck Showalter about a month ago about platooning. And I don't like to platoon guys if you really don't have to. And Kowser, to me, is a guy that I'd like to see just keep throwing him out there in the situations. So whatever the Orioles' composition is going to be moving forward, I hope that it leads to at-bats for some of these guys. Beavers is interesting. You know, I wonder, does Beavers have a lot of value that a team, if the Orioles were trying to buy a pitcher here for mm-hmm. team control for future years, are they buying the Dylan Beavers hype more so than the Orioles are? And if that's the case, maybe you're going to see Dylan mm-hmm. Beavers somewhere else, but he's had a great year. He's knocking on the doorstep. He deserves a chance in the big leagues here upcoming. I can't give an honest answer on what that can possibly look like because I still see Tyler O'Neill, and he's been swinging the bat well, right? You know, I know people saying, oh, too little, too late. Swinging the bat well, it builds confidence moving forward. You got Kowser. I do think that one of the prospects, though, Beavers, maybe even Heston, could be on the way out here mm-hmm. at the deadline.
Talking with Ryan Ripkins, Inside Access here on The Fan. Ryan, if you were Mike Elias, are you trading Ramon Laureano, and why are you either keeping or trading him?
I'm only moving Laureano if it blows me away. Mainly because I love the value that he's going to bring to my team for next year. I think that it was one of the best moves of the offseason, not just in the Orioles sense around Major League Baseball. A guy that has found a home and is very comfortable. Like, I almost put it at a sense of when you look at a guy like Ryan O'Hearn, where, you know, but even more so, Ramon's had success elsewhere of good production. But Ryan O'Hearn came to Baltimore and got really comfortable and really turned into a really good big league hitter here the last couple of years. I think Ramon Laureano is going to be able to continue to replicate this for the Orioles for next year. I do. And I think he's proven his value being here. But having said that, you got to see if another team is going to value him higher. You know, and I don't want to just give him away to give him away for a prospect. And when you're looking at, when I say prospect, so Sir Anthony Dominguez got a top 10 prospect from the Jays. They're 10th overall, which is now the Orioles' 8th in Watts Brown, the pitcher. I think you got to get something that would be north of that, maybe even packaged in. because I think a team that wants Ramon Laureano has the plans of playing him quite a lot, not only through the end of 25, but 26. So give me a deal that blows me away, or it'd be great to see Ramon Laureano be a big part of what the Orioles do in 26.
Ryan, earlier today, kind of called the bullpen's future the land of opportunity. They've already traded away three arms. Felix Bautista, we might not see him throw another pitch this season. We'll see if Andrew Kittredge gets dealt. Just how do you view this bullpen over the final 2 months? And has anyone caught your eye, some of these newcomers?
Well, I always love that guys get opportunities. And I know people are frustrated with the results, or, you know, I saw some today even doing my show, Ryan Ripken show, by the way, every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, shameless plug here. But nice. The Dominguez move where people go, wait, like, you know, you just traded that guy away. We got nobody. Well, got a good deal for a rental at the time. And Dominguez has proven his value. He's going to help the Jays. But for some of these Orioles pitchers, this is a really good opportunity to find out, one, can you have staying power? And two, can you figure out how to be a big league reliever? Being a reliever in the big leagues, unless you're a closer, it's not glamorous. You're sitting there knowing that people are going to expect for you to be good each time. And if you give something up, they're going to criticize you because doing the dirty work, in my mind, a guy that sets up for the closer or middle relief, it's just expected to have success. So I've loved seeing that some guys have relished the opportunity, some guys that might not have gotten that chance. And I think that the Orioles are going to see who could be a part of that for next year, while also then, you know, depending on how it all shapes up, shaping their bullpen and their off-season acquisitions because of that. And last thing, because you said Felix Bautista, I ain't throwing Felix another inning this year. I'm not risking it. As soon as you tell me there's no timeline with his shoulder, I am not risking the all-star and future backbone, at least for this team moving forward. So give guys other opportunity to handle high leverage situations.
Ryan Ripken, always great, man. We will find out a lot about what this roster is going to look like tomorrow. It should be a fun 24 hours. Thanks, as always, for your time.
Of course. Appreciate you guys. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.
Thank you.
Coming up next, let's get back to the Ravens. By the way, Cordell Woodland is going to join us at 5:30, get his thoughts on training camp, maybe some Orioles as well. He was out at one winning drive today. But Malachi Starks, first-round pick, he's been out there for practice. What kind of impact, how impactful is Malachi Starks going to be as a rookie with the Ravens? We'll tell you next here on The Fan.
This first week of training camp, he's passed with flying colors. Like I always say, when you're a talented player and you work hard, the chances of you being successful are dang near 100%. So Malachi fits that mold.
That was Zach Orr the other day talking about Malachi Starks, and I can just speak by what I saw yesterday. The kid looks the part out there on the football field. Bone, you were out there as well. I don't know how much of Malachi you got a chance to see, but he is living up to everything we've heard about him so far, yet we have not seen games yet. So what kind of impact do you think Malachi Starks can have once they start playing football?
I think he's going to have a significant impact. I mean, you don't throw terms around like 100% willy-nilly about a kid who's never, you know, played a snap in the NFL. He'll make some mistakes. There'll be bumps in the road. They face some elite quarterbacks early on, and there will be things for him to learn from. But what I think it's become apparent to them through their preparation in evaluating him before the draft and then getting him in their building. I don't think he's the kind of kid who's going to make the same mistake twice, three times, four times. I mean, we had guys like Marcus Williams, established veterans here, making a lot of money, making the same mistake two times, three times. You know, what is it, shame on me, shame on me. Then it starts to be shame on you. I don't think that's how this young man's wired.
No, he seems like a student of the game. He seems like a player, despite being a rookie, that has taken on a leadership role already. And something that's important to point out about Malachi Starks is, yes, he's a rookie, but he played a lot of college football.
Yes, he did.
He started as a freshman on Georgia's national championship team in 2022 when Todd Monken was there. First team All-American in 23, second team All-American last year. I don't think this is going to be a situation where this is too big for him.
He seems that, first of all, the other thing I noticed, just being up close, he's big.
Yeah.
Like he has literally, and you hate to hype up a rookie, but he has every intangible. He's got the size, he's got the ball skills. Mentally, he seems to have everything you'd want. Granted, safety is not like if he had everything you'd want and he was a pass rusher, he'd probably gone top five in the draft, but he's a safety.
Look, the kid who McDonald took, you're hearing all kinds of great things about in Seattle.
Eamon Worry.
Who went in the second round. I thought they would have taken him with their first pick. Or one of these safeties with their first pick, and they didn't, and it worked out well for them. And I'm sure the Ravens are loving the way it worked out for them because they were able to get a pass rusher in the second round and they addressed safety first. But yeah, the position has something to do with it. Not everybody values safeties like they do. Not every team that had just taken a safety in the top half of the first round a couple years ago would turn around and invest premium draft property in another one. But it's not out of character for these guys. It's not a stretch. It's not a force. It's just who they are. And they've done a really good job with it for the most part. And it's not like this kid, again, came from some project. Like, I can remember, like, the kid from Connecticut who, you know, jumped a million feet and the safety there blew up the combine.
But it's like Mike Mamula.
He played at Connecticut, you know what I mean? Like, this kid did it every week. In the SEC at a time when the SEC was king.
Byron Jones.
Yeah. Box jump, crazy.
Beltway Ben.
Three cone, crazy. Like, how does a guy that size run that fast and leap that high? And he's a nice NFL player, but like...
This secondary is going to be the strength of the football team, and quite frankly, it better be, considering all that they've invested. They have five first-round picks in this secondary, four of which... were the Ravens' own first-round picks. So they've spent significant money. They've spent significant draft capital. Now it just has to show up on Sunday.
So let me ask you this. If we look at the end of the season and say, would it shock you if Malachi Starks, because let's face it, one of the things about him is ball skills. If I told you he had four picks this year, would it shock you?
No.
He's going to be the center fielder because they're going to want Hamilton doing all the stuff they love.
That wouldn't shock me. I mean, look, when this thing was being played at a thesis level, you know, NFL defense 601 level course, I'm old enough to remember Geno having six picks in 7 weeks.
Yep.
He led the AFC in picks.
Yeah. So... yeah, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility at all. Like, there's going to be some errant passes. There's going to be some confusion. They're going to be able to get some of these quarterbacks to think they're seeing one thing, but it's really something else.
Right? Go ahead, Bonstar.
Yeah, I was going to say, turnovers, that's been the theme. They've been talking about forcing more turnovers, going back to OTA's mini camp, and it's continued throughout training camp. So I think it's going to be him, but also the rest of this defense, getting interceptions, force fumbles, fumble recoveries. Like, that is priority number one for this defense this year.
Ravens done at one winning drive for the day. Cordell Woodland's going to join us at 5:30. He was out there. Get his thoughts on what he saw today. But coming up next, and this is very apropos today because we've all experienced going to training camp in a media capacity. So with that in mind, six worst things about covering training camp. We'll give you our list next here on The Fan.